The pain in Spain leads Spaniards to complain.
And in non-rhyming news, the jobless claims numbers hit a four-year low. Hello, I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York.
I'm Jeff Horwich in Los Angeles. It's the Marketplace Midday Update for Thursday, July 12th. We will also talk about why Burma/Myanmar is open for business.
And there's a new report in the Boston Globe today that finds that Mitt Romney was in government documents as the head of Bain Capital 3 years after he says he left the company. We'll find out from the writer of that story what's going on. It's all coming up on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Let Marketplace be your guide to the modern world. Subscribe to the Marketplace Tech Report podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
The Labor Department said this morning the number of people applying for unemployment benefits fell by 26,000 last week to 350,000. And that's the best number since March of 2008.
And it's where we'll start now with Diane Swonk, chief economist with Mesirow Financial. She's with us from Chicago, as she is every Thursday. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, Diane, what's with this big drop in the number of people asking for unemployment benefits?
Well, I'd love to say that it was a major improvement in the labor market, but it's really more a quirk in the way that the seasonal adjustments are done. We actually have seen the auto sector as a major bright spot in the U.S. economy, and the auto sector did not shut down for retooling many of its plants because it wanted to keep that production going in July, as it usually does during the first 2 weeks of July. We'll see those jobless claims pick up again as we move through this seasonal quirk in the numbers. The good news is the auto sector is okay, but it's really overstating the extent to which the labor market is improving at this stage of the game.
So just a seasonal quirk. What do you think is going on with the big picture on jobs right now?
It's still a very tepid employment market out there, labor market out there, and anyone looking for a job can certainly confirm that. I wish it was a much more stronger employment market, but this is still very tepid at its very best.
What about the housing market, Diane? We got some numbers today from the foreclosure listing firm Realty Track that say foreclosure activity is actually down compared with a year ago, and there seems to be some talk out there that maybe we've finally reached a bottom in the housing market. What do you think?
I think we have reached a bottom in the housing market. It's a soft bottom at best, but it is a bottom, and that's one of the bright spots along with the auto industry and what continues to be a very uneven recovery. That said, I look at the housing market, and I'm excited about it, but let's face it, I've given up wishing upon a star for this economy.
Diane Swonk, chief economist with Mesirow Financial. Let's hope we can get your wishful thinking back soon. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So more now on that question of whether the U.S. housing market has really hit bottom. We asked Marketplace's David Gura to look into the facts.
Economists pore over data, charts, and spreadsheets to assess the health of the housing market. Phil Swagel teaches public policy at the University of Maryland. If you look at a graph of the housing market over these last few years, it's pretty dramatic.
Oh boy, it is a really deep valley. It's like a gorge. So we're still toward the bottom of that gorge. But we're bumping along the bottom, and in some measures, we're starting to climb out of it.
The housing market has a lot of moving parts. Foreclosure activity is one of them, but there are also signs of improvement in home sales and construction. Mark Vittner says the median price of homes is an important indicator. He's a senior economist at Wells Fargo.
The actual low in home prices is behind us, and it's behind us in virtually every part of the United States.
And as the inventory of foreclosed properties goes down, housing prices should continue to go up. In Washington, I'm David Gura from Marketplace.
So to Europe now, and this is not the deal many Spanish people thought they were getting. As the first batch of bailout funds arrives at Spain's banks, Prime Minister Mariano Rajoy has announced an austerity plan to slash the public deficit. That means tax hikes, cuts to unemployment benefits, and it's fair to say this was a bit of a surprise to many folks. Marketplace's Stephen Beard is with me now from London. Hello.
Hello, Jeff.
So it was not long ago we reported on this grand euro bargain that was supposed to allow the eurozone to bail out Spanish banks directly and save the kind of austerity that's been imposed in Greece, for example. What happened in Spain?
It wasn't true. I mean, it turns out there were strings attached to the bailout, in spite of the fact that the Prime Minister was bragging at the time that he'd won special concessions. He was part of this new austerity-light approach to the crisis. He has been forced to swallow a lot more austerity in return for the bailout. Further cuts in public spending, a cut in unemployment benefit, for example, and a tax hike. And all this in a country which is in recession and where youth unemployment is 50%.
So what's been the reaction in Spain today?
Shock, dismay, fury. I mean, this news about the austerity package coincided yesterday with a protest march by coal miners who face mine closures because of subsidy cuts. That march ended with tear gas and bloodshed, the kind of violence we usually associate with Greece. So very bitter mood in Spain today.
We also have some more indications of the longer term effects of the European recession in Europe and beyond. What are you hearing?
Yes, well, the International Labour Organization says austerity in the Eurozone could cost the bloc another 4.5 million jobs over the next 4 years. The ILO is calling for an end to austerity. Meanwhile, OPEC, the oil cartel, says the growth in global demand for oil next year will slow down because of the Eurozone debt crisis. It is dragging down the global economy.
Stephen Beard in London, thank you.
Okay, Jeff.
With the Eurozone in constant crisis mode, much of the world has been looking to China to provide a global pick-me-up. But economists say there's nothing to see here. China's going to release its GDP growth numbers tomorrow. And as Marketplace's Rob Schmitz reports from Shanghai, nearly everyone is expecting the worst growth in 3 years.
Economists are predicting China's economy is growing at 7.6%. Not bad when compared to U.S. GDP, but it's a stark departure from the not-so-long-ago golden days of double-digit growth in China. Chinese Premier Wen Jiabao revealed this week his plan to get China out of this slump. Build steel mills, train lines, bridges.
Just the other day, Premier Wen came out and said, we really have to boost investment because that's the only thing that's going to deliver the short-term GDP growth.
Patrick Shavonik is an economist at Tsinghua University. He says Wen's plan is a big mistake because it focuses too much on the short term.
Because you're giving up really something that's much more important, which is the long-term health of the Chinese economy, just to hit a number.
Shavonik thinks China should instead lower taxes, invest more in healthcare, things that would put more money in the pockets of consumers. But as Beijing reaches into its economic toolbox, what we're seeing are projects like this one. Bao Steel, China's largest state-run steelmaker, will build a new $11 billion steel mill at a time when China's steel capacity outstrips demand by 220 million tons. In Shanghai, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
Well, remember back in April, that famous 1895 Edvard Munch painting, The Scream, sold to an anonymous buyer for $120 million, Jeff?
Yep.
Well, the Wall Street Journal appears to have identified the buyer as Leon Black. Now, he didn't confirm or deny the journal's reporting on this, but Black is the founder of the private equity firm Apollo Global Management. His fortune is said to top $3 billion. So if you think of it as if somebody had a fortune of, let's say, $300,000, they would have just spent, $10,000, $12,000 on the painting.
Oh, I remember when that was going on. It was like two anonymous people on the phone back and forth at Sotheby's, right? If you've got a lot of money to throw around and you happen to have missed out on the Scream painting, here's something else to spend it on, especially if you're really excited about the discovery of the Higgs boson, that subatomic particle that they call the God particle, the foundation of all matter in the universe, something like that. Well, if you're itching to partake in particle physics, you can follow Patrick Stevenson Keating, who's a designer. He lives in the UK, and he made, just out of what appear to be like kitchen implements and some glass-blown bulbs that he made himself, a working particle accelerator in his garage or whatever. And he set it up in an Italian department store in Milan for some big design festival there. And the thing actually works. I find that incredible because these things are supposed to take football fields. Right.
Well, hopefully his will not create a black hole. That would be unfortunate.
A tiny little black hole on your kitchen table, in fact, which is where he says you could set something like this
maybe
up.
Maybe it'll get rid of the dirty dishes.
Just
that
run,
would be a good
run that by your spouse before you install it on the kitchen table.
Do you enjoy the music we play between stories? Visit the Marketplace Music section to browse playlists for all of our programs and to buy those songs on Amazon. A percentage of each purchase goes towards supporting our programs. Find more online at marketplace.org/music.
Now to the presidential race. The Boston Globe is reporting this morning that government documents show GOP presidential hopeful Mitt Romney remained CEO and chairman of the private equity firm Bain Capital for 3 years after he has said he left Bain. Chris Rowland is Washington Bureau Chief for The Globe. He co-wrote the story, and he's with us now. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, what exactly did you find as you looked through these documents?
Well, we started looking over the SEC documents from the period 1999 forward, after Mitt Romney says he left Bain Capital. And it turns out there's a number of filings in there that list him as president, CEO, sole owner, chief executive, and chairman of Bain Capital.
And what's Bain saying about this, or what is Mitt Romney's campaign saying about this?
Well, they haven't gone on the record yet with any kind of significant defense. I mean, they've pointed us to their records that they filed in his financial disclosure report, which say that after 1999, he had absolutely nothing to do with Bain Capital. On background conversations, they're suggesting this is some sort of legal technicality, because SEC and corporate documents are complicated. There was some sort of legacy legal requirements that they were listing him. But in fact, we've talked to some experts who say SEC documents really do matter. They're very material. And so it's a significant contradiction that's going to have to be resolved as we go forward.
And why should this matter to voters around the country, whether Romney left Bain in 1999 or 2002?
So Mitt Romney's significant frontline defense on many attacks based on Bain's business practices has been that, hey, I wasn't there. I left the company in 1999. So to see now that from 1999 to 2002, at least on paper, he was the man in charge of the whole show, he does have now ownership of a number of those various deals that resulted in bankruptcies or potentially layoffs. And so I think what we're going to have now is a new flurry of scrutiny surrounding what exactly he was doing at Bain and how these filings came to be.
Chris Rowland of the Boston Globe, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
So from newspapers to some other media outlets, public radio, of course, we know you trust public radio. You're listening to Marketplace. But how do you feel about your local TV news? Well, that brings us to our weekly attitude check.
And the latest poll numbers suggest margin of error.
There is somewhat of a disconnect.
It's conventional wisdom.
Our survey said.
Attitude Check is our partnership with polling organization Gallup. Gallup's editor-in-chief is Frank Newport. Hi, Frank.
Good morning.
So today we are talking about television news. And I guess for local TV, we could frame this as kind of a best of times, worst of times situation. And let's start with the worst.
Well, the worst of times probably is that confidence in television news is the lowest in our history of measuring it. 21% of Americans say they have a great deal or quite a bit of confidence in television news. And these data were collected a couple of weeks ago, but before the Supreme Court decision came down, where we had the blunders by CNN and Fox News. So not good news in terms of that aspect of TV news.
We hear a lot about waning confidence in newspapers. How does television news compare?
Well, newspapers are doing a little better. You know, newspapers aren't doing well financially, but confidence in newspapers now is at 23%. How's that? A couple of points higher than television news.
So now to some good news for television stations, in some places anyway. Lots of spending on political ads. What kind of dollars are we talking about?
You know, the National Journal had done some review of that, and it's very, very high. They reported, for example, in Tampa, which is down there in Florida, a swing state, $12.1 million in presidential ad spending this year just in that market.
Wow.
So if you have a TV station in a swing state at this moment, it's great news because those people are coming to you with open checkbooks to try to buy television ad time on your station.
And what do you at Gallup know about what kinds of political ads affect people and who is actually affected by them?
You know, it's an interesting question. We asked people in swing states in a recent poll, have you seen ads? And sure enough, they had. 82% said they had. And that's 20 points higher than the percent of people in the country as a whole outside of swing states who have seen political ads. So clearly they're making a difference. But we ask Americans, all right, are they affecting your vote? And most Americans said, of course not. You know, we like to think that we're not subject to being affected by the ads.
And that's self-reported data. So people may be affected. They just don't think they are.
Ah, that's a good insight throughout history. How's that? Uh-huh. Americans have denied that negative ads make much effect on their vote. But, of course, the reason political consultants keep running negative ads is they do move the needle in terms of tracking on who you're going to support. So I think they have more effect than people want to let on.
Gallup editor-in-chief Frank Newport, thank you.
My pleasure.
You cannot see Nickelodeon, MTV, and Comedy Central on DirecTV right now. That's because there's a contract dispute going on between Viacom, which owns those networks, and DirecTV. Viacom says it wants more money for its programming. DirecTV says it doesn't want to pass on more costs to consumers. Sally Herships has the story.
The Viacom-DirecTV dispute is a lot simpler than the plot of some complex soap opera.
Viacom wants you to blame DirecTV.
DirecTV is taking Nickelodeon away from you.
No!
That means no more SpongeBob.
Oh, yeah, help me!
No more Dora.
I need your help!
No more iCarly.
Shut your mouth!
And DirecTV wants you to blame Viacom.
Unfortunately, Viacom has decided to take their channels away from our customers.
While DirecTV has 20 million subscribers, their ads and Viacom's may be more dramatic than the actual dispute.
It's not like it hasn't happened before. I mean, you know, and it's happening more and more now.
Mike Farrell is senior finance editor at Multichannel News. He says disagreements like these around contract renewal time are typical. Viacom says it's only asking for a couple of pennies per day more per subscriber. But DirecTV says that adds up to $1 billion. Farrell says the real plot twist is Viacom asking for more money when its ratings are sinking. I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
After many, many years for American companies, Burma is again open for business. The White House yesterday eased sanctions on the country, which is officially known as Myanmar. In fact, foreign investors from many countries are itching to get in there, especially oil and gas companies. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, here's Scott Tong.
5 years ago, on Myanmar's border with China, I met a young Burmese woman who gave massages, 50 cents an hour.
Growing up, the only way we could eat and feel full was to eat lots of plain rice. We never ate chicken or fish.
Now, foreign investors are coming, promising factories and jobs. Global sanctions eased when the new government released prisoners and allowed trade unions and protests. David Steinberg teaches at Georgetown.
But I do not believe that reforms can stop. There's too much faith in the society for change.
For investors, the prize is resources: oil, gas, jade, teak, historically controlled by the military junta. The White House still bans U.S. firms from dealing with the military, but Steinberg thinks they'll get their cut.
The military has controlled that country for 50 years. Most of the centers of power are under military or quasi-military control.
This weekend, Secretary Clinton visits Myanmar, as do U.S. multinationals. In Washington, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
So, Jeremy, the Comic-Con convention is underway in San Diego. I don't know if are you a Comic-Con aficionado?
I'm not
a big
comic person, but I know that this thing is very big for a lot of people.
Looks like fun. If you are the type, in general sense, not you, Jeremy, but if you're the type who is keen to put on tights and a cape, well, maybe you're at Comic-Con right now, but think about taking off later this summer for Paul's Valley, Oklahoma. That's the home of the Toy and Action Figure Museum, and their goal is to pull off the Guinness record for most original superheroes gathered in one place.
Hmm.
The key word here is original, so they don't want Batman and Wonder Woman and Superman running around, but if you've got to get up for, I don't know, like Sandusky Super Accountant Guy or something, I would say you have finally found your calling. The record, by the way, is 437. That's the record they're trying to break.
Wow. Wow. Well, in Brazil, the number of the day is 32 million. That's how many dogs there are in that country. It's the second largest dog population in the world after the United States, according to the Telegraph newspaper. But apparently that population is not quite big enough for one couple that has decided to open up a pet love hotel where dog owners can pay $50 a day to send their dogs into rooms with heart-shaped mirrors on the ceiling and romantic lighting.
I don't.
Whatever they might want to do with that, those dogs.
I don't get it. To pee on the furniture. That's what I would expect they would do.
Well, the Pet Love Hotel will also feature a fitness center, Jeff, in case the dogs need a workout, and meeting space for the dogs to celebrate their birthdays. I don't know if they have a business center in the Pet Love Hotel or if they have reward points if the dogs come back often.
Either way, it's good to know Brazilian dogs are well taken care of. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeff Horwich.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.